vivo qualitative data analysis software empowers researchers around the world to discover rich insights within their qualitative data. This podcast gives you unique insights into the methods, the processes, and the passions of researchers. Welcome to the InVivo podcast, Between the Data.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Stacey Penna, the Engagement and Enablement Director at Lumavero. Today's podcast is with Dr. Dana Linnell, Assistant Professor of Psychology and Evaluation at the University of Wisconsin-Stout. Her research focuses on the evaluation profession, including defining evaluation, data visualization practices in evaluation, the role of politics in evaluation, and more. Dana is one of our keynote speakers for this year's Lumavero virtual conference in September. So welcome, Dana.
Thank you so much for having me, Stacey.
Yeah, I'm excited about this discussion. So why did you decide to focus your research on the evaluation profession?
Yeah, I perhaps maybe should back up just a little bit of like how I got into evaluation. I think it's something that a lot of people aren't really aware of what evaluation is. And I was the same way. I didn't know what it was. And I came into getting a master's degree at Claremont Graduate University. And at the time, almost all the master's degree in the psychology department had these co-concentrations in evaluation. I went in for positive psychology. I was really excited about that, but I was like, I don't know what this co-concentration is. But as soon as I got into those courses, I was like, oh yes, this is what I've been looking for. I was looking for something where I could apply what I was learning in these professional contexts. At the time, really focused on educational contexts. And so I was like, how do I apply all this work? Well, evaluation is one way we can do it, kind of like applied research. From day one, I fell in love with evaluation. And so it was very easy for me to just make that everything that I focused on. So I ended up getting my PhD in evaluation. I did a lot of research. I focused my thesis and dissertation on evaluation. And now I'm teaching evaluation. So I've just, from day one, I was just like, this is where I need to be.
That's excellent. I like, love that. So why is it difficult to define what evaluation is to non-evaluators?
Yeah, I think part of the issue is people come in with an expectation of what evaluation is, right? Evaluation is a term that's used in a lot of different fields. For example, I teach in our Master's of Applied Psychology program. I often get a lot of students who apply because they see the evaluation concentration and go like, oh yeah, I want to evaluate mental health in like therapy, counseling contexts. And even my wordage there may not be correct because like, I don't do that stuff, right? But they see evaluation and they think psych evaluations, like psychotherapy evaluation type stuff, right? So not that. But then there are people doing personnel evaluations, you know, when you're trying to get a pay raise or something. There are product evaluations out there thinking about like, what is the best car that I should buy right now? So lots of that happening. But we're also just constantly thinking about evaluation as a day-to-day activity as well. And given that it's used in a lot of different contexts, I think there's a lot of different definitions that might be out there, but we're also not spending a lot of time as a society writ large, right? Thinking about like, what is evaluation? You know, we're just using it as a term that's in our everyday life. But for those of us like myself, who are professional evaluators, who are in the profession of evaluation, it becomes a lot more critical for us to think about what is evaluation. And in my case, I like to think about not just what is evaluation, but how is it different from other similar evaluation-like activities. So for example, applied research is a big one that a lot of people think evaluation is just applied research, or it's just an experimental design testing whether something works. And I think those can be definitions of evaluation, but I don't think there are all-encompassing definitions of what evaluation is. So the multitude of applications of evaluation across a multitude of fields means it's just a very eclectic definition, which I think is also a very good thing. There's a lot of benefits and strengths to that, but there's also a lot of challenges associated with that in terms of talking to other people about, for example, we are a unique profession. And when you think of evaluation as applied research, it's hard to understand why we might consider ourselves distinct in that regard.
Mm-hmm. So, well, how do you define evaluation then?
Yeah, I'm not sure I necessarily have a definition that I say is evaluation. I know we're going to talk about a paper that I wrote kind of talking about this stuff. And you'll note that I never define evaluation in there myself, right? I spent a lot of time thinking at the end, should I be prescribing what I think is the evaluation definition? And I stepped back from that personally, at least for that particular study. But to me, when I think of evaluation, there is a few components to it. One of which is that it is a scientific enterprise, that you're doing systematic inquiry, that you're using social science research methods, that you are investigating something using that scientific inquiry. And that's where I think a lot of people think, well, so then evaluation's research. And in that regard, yes. But it's this extra additional component of evaluation, which I think helps what's distinguishing evaluation from other things. And it's the values component of evaluation, right? Mm-hmm. It's in the name of evaluation. And so values inquiry is the big thing that differentiates evaluation from other things, in that you are establishing what are the criteria that you're looking for, what are the standards of performance for those criteria. You're measuring the performance of the thing, whatever it is that you're evaluating, and then you're making an overall judgment of some sort, whether it be on each of the criteria or if it's on an overall judgment. So for example, like, you know, I mentioned you might be evaluating what car that you need to purchase. Right? The overall final outcome of that evaluation is a purchasing of a car. It's a big deal, right? There's a lot of criteria you might think about. You might think about the miles per gallon. You might think about how many people it can seat. You might think about whether it's a hybrid or an electric vehicle or just a gas-powered vehicle. All of those things are criteria. You set the standards that you think are important. And then you have to like make that overall judgment, but it's a little hard. You can't just say, well, this is best on all of them, because that's usually not the case, right? Mm-hmm. So then you're weighting things and you're like, oh, well, miles per gallon is really important to me right now. So I'm going to weight that more heavily than what the color of the vehicle is, because that's for me and more aesthetic and not as important. And so you weight all those things, you gather all your data. If you nerd out like me, you put it all to a nice spreadsheet, right? And then you figure out what you're going to purchase. With a car, it's one thing, but when you're evaluating things like, one, I mean, personnel evaluation, like your performance over the year to determine whether, one, you're staying on, or two, if you're getting a pay raise, those are a little bit more challenging. Or evaluating the implementation and outcomes of a federal policy, right? That's where things get really, really tricky, because it's not so cut and dry of what you're actually looking at.
So in those cases, do you have criteria you're following to evaluate it, or do you have to find the criteria?
Yeah. So thinking about the criteria, there's a lot of ways we could come about that, right? There might be pre-established criteria from the thing that's being evaluated. So for example, if it's a policy, there might be criteria that they've established as part of the policy mandating whatever it is that you're evaluating. Oftentimes, that's not the case. You have to figure out what are the criteria. And so this is where evaluation is less of basic research and more of applied research, in that you can't just do this on your own. You are doing this with the people for whom whatever you're evaluating is affecting. So a car is one thing. It's really only affecting you, right? You and your family. For example, I do a lot of work in after-school programs. When you're evaluating an after-school program, who do you need to think about is helping establish what those criteria are? It's, you know, you as an evaluator with your judgment of, and your professional expertise and judgment as an evaluator. But it's also the program and the people who are running the program, who are funding the program, who are participating in the program. Those are really key, important voices to help establish what those criteria are, because they might say like, oh, you think this is important? Well, I don't think that's important at all. I think this is important. They have a sometimes a better glimpse into what are going to be the important criteria to look into. But then there are other people as well. So, you know, you might think of these as kind of levels of people's voices that might influence all of this decision making. But people like, for example, the after school program, the parents of the children participating have a unique and important voice. The community has a unique and important voice. The state and maybe laws that are in place, or the city ordinances or whatever, they might have important voices that can shape what that evaluation will look like as well.
Cool. Thank you. That's interesting. Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by Lumavero, developers of Invivo and other software designed by and for data experts to illuminate powerful new insights that help customers make decisions with confidence. If you're looking for a better way to analyze and visualize your statistical data, try using Excel Stat with the 14-day trial.
And this is what your paper was about, talking about the difference between research and evaluation. So can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So this paper was something I did in graduate school. It was something that came out of me still not quite understanding the difference myself. I had read so much. I was tested on it. I felt like I kind of knew what evaluation was. But every once in a while, I'd be like, wait, is that evaluation or is that applied research? And to this day, I know now it's not as black and white as I was hoping it would be. It's not. Things never are, right? There are gradations and there are things that are more evaluation-like and more research-like. But at the time, I really wanted to better understand these things. And so what better way than to investigate it? And when I was delving into the literature, this ended up being a perennial issue. This is something that the field has been grappling with for so long. So it's like, okay, I'm not alone, which is nice, but also there's room for looking into this empirically, as opposed to just kind of saying what we think those differences might be. So I did a study looking at members of the American Evaluation Association as evaluators, and as well as members of the American Educational Research Association as more applied researchers. Specifically, I got people from the division that's focused on applied research and evaluation in schools. And so I had researchers, I had evaluators, I asked them both, what do you think is the definition of evaluation? I coded those to find out what are the key components of those definitions. And then I presented them a framework from Matheson 2008. She had described five different ways we might think about the differences between research and evaluation. And so one of those is thinking of them as one and the same. Evaluation is applied research. You could think if it's a Venn diagram, it's completely overlapping. You could also think of evaluation and applied research as having similar yet distinct components. So again, Venn diagram, but it's overlapping, but not completely. So there's unique components to both, but there's also key similarities between both as well. A third way is kind of similar to that, and it's thinking of it more as a continuum. So are various aspects, or is the study as a whole more evaluation-like or more applied research-like? So those are three. Two of the other ways are thinking of evaluation as a subcomponent of research. This is the way that I think a lot of people in my research preview found a lot of people think of it this way, as evaluation is kind of a method in a researcher's toolbox. So not thinking of it as necessarily a distinct profession, a distinct field. It is something that researchers can use, and it is something that is subsumed by research. The other fifth way is thinking of evaluation as actually the larger thing in which research is subsumed. So this is treating evaluation as a transdiscipline. So some of the eminent scholars in our field, like Michael Scriven, have really talked about how evaluation really is a transdiscipline, kind of like ethics. It's one of those things that every single field is using, whether or not they say they're using it. So for example, researchers are using evaluation every day to determine what should they study? How should they study it? What are the, for example, statistical criterion cutoff that they should be using, like P less than 0.05? That is a value judgment that people are placing on their data of how they're reaching statistical significance. So thinking of it that way, we might think of evaluation as the thing of which research is a subcomponent of. That being said, very few people actually think that way. And that even though perhaps in reality, that might be the case, the way people think about it, that's not the case. So even myself, like, I don't necessarily endorse that opinion either. So I presented those five different ways after asking them, like, what is your opinion on the differences between the two? And then of these five, which one best describes the difference you think is between research and evaluation? And then I also asked, like, across a variety of different areas, do you think these areas differ somewhat, differ greatly, or do not differ at all between research and evaluation? So this was just a survey. It was very brief. I got a pretty good response size. I don't have that information off the top of my head. I suppose I should have the paper in front of me. But yeah, I was able to qualitatively code the definitions that participants provided, as well as quantitatively analyze the 5 different ways people thought, finding out are there differences between evaluators and researchers in their responses, and the percentage of frequency on those various aspects of how they might differ or not.
So, I mean, what did you feel would be your method with those 5 that you just described?
Yeah, I feel closest to the idea of it as an overlapping Venn diagram, that there are key similarities. So one way actually that evaluators have commonly kind of visualized the difference between the two is with an hourglass figure, where at the start of an evaluation or a research study, that's where some of the biggest differences are, that they're going to have different purposes, they're going to have different audiences in mind, they're going to have different questions that they're answering, they're going to have different who's at the table type things as well. Mm-hmm. But in the middle of methods results, that's going to look pretty similar, right? You're going to use the same social science inquiry. You're going to use surveys and interviews and, mixed methods designs or quasi experiments, whatever it might be. There are some evaluation specific methods, but not enough to say it's fully different, right? They're still very similar. But then you spread out again at the end of a study and thinking of what are the implications of this? How is this generalizable? Evaluations tend not to be. Mm-hmm. That's not the purpose of them. It's right. To find out what about the specific thing you're inquiring about, not about making generalizable results. How are you going to disseminate that? Evaluations themselves are often not published, not in the way that a typical research study would be. Not to say that they're never published. There are plenty of them out there that are published. But the purpose is a little different. So really, most of my stuff, I just write up in a report and I give it back to the people who commissioned me for doing that study in the first place, right? So that hourglass figure, I really like. It aligns with that Venn diagram figure. So that's the one I think I like the most. And in mm-hmm. fact, was the one that most participants endorsed as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. And I was going to ask you, it seems like the output's different, right? And your stakeholders can be different from the researcher versus the evaluator.
Yeah. I mean, the bigger difference is between basic research and evaluation, right? Basic research, it's the researchers deciding what they're going to study, how they're going to study it on their own. They do their thing and they publish it. There's no outside input whatsoever mm-hmm. for the most part. Mm-hmm. Applied research starts to build in a lot more of that outside voice into it. Mm-hmm. If I'm doing applied research in schools, well, I am going to need schools to be on board with me collecting data at their mm-hmm. site. The extent to which they're involved varies. And that is true for evaluation too. Not all evaluators think of it the same way as well. Mm-hmm. Some are very of the mind that they need to be completely independent and there's no right or wrong way to do any of that. But then evaluation, it's that values component, but still there's going to be stakeholders because you're dealing with something that somebody has created that's usually not you, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can't just say I'm just going to evaluate you and you're going to have nothing to do with it. It can happen, mm-hmm. But they need to have buy-in in the first place often mm-hmm. for that to actually occur.
Mm-hmm. Got you. Okay. Thank you. And you already mentioned your research methods. I mean, it sounds to me as sort of mixed methods that because you're using the qualitative and quantitative, do evaluators talk in that language?
Yeah. Evaluators definitely are using mixed methods, qualitative, mm-hmm. quantitative. They're using that language as well. I'm of the mind that a survey that uses both qualitative and quantitative items isn't mixed methods per se. I don't know. My students and I always debate this every year. I'm of the mind that it's a survey, so it's one method. So it's not, can't be mixing mm-hmm. unless there's very intentional mixing of the qualitative and quantitative.
We'll take a quick break from the episode. You can find Dr. Linnell's work at danalinnell.com, danalinnell.com.
Did you want to elaborate on anything with your research methods? Anything that you think would help other people doing evaluations? And not just that study, but in other evaluations you've done.
Yeah. So the methods in evaluation are going to vary just as much as you see in research, right? There are evaluators who predominantly do qualitative work. There are evaluators who predominantly do quantitative work. There are evaluators who are more mixed methods. I personally, and I know there's others evaluators like myself who take more of a contingency-based approach of, you know, like I do both and I do whatever makes sense for the particular program I'm evaluating, depending on the questions that are being asked, depending on the budget that they have, depending on the timeline, depending on what their interests are. Sometimes you're like, oh, I think this should be a qualitative interview setting. They're like, no, you have to do a survey. It's like, oh, okay, well, let's talk about that. But if you're completely adamant, then yeah, maybe we can do that. Maybe we can make that work.
Okay, great. We talked about your findings in somewhat already, I think, in the paper you were talking about the difference between evaluation and research. But I don't know if you want to talk about, obviously, there's findings. And like you said, you have a certain stakeholders, you're working with participants because they're asking you to do the evaluation. So do you find there's any difference when you're reporting your findings with an evaluation versus a research like journal article?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So research article, you're going to have your, you know, IMRAD, right? Your intro, methods, results, discussion, APA formatting. If you're kind of in that field, it's going to be very jargon filled and academic language, right? That's not going to fly in an evaluation report. And so with evaluation reports, it's really starting with who your audience is in mind, right? So for a journal article, it's perfect because who's your audience? It's other researchers. They know how to read that stuff for the most part. We could have conversations about how it's probably still not appropriate. But when your clients, when you're the people who are going to be reading your reports, don't have a background in research or evaluation, they are just really good at running their program. You have to think more critically about how you're writing things up. And so some of the things you're thinking about are overall organization, right? You're not going to spend half your paper talking about your intro and methods. You're going to get to the point. What do they care about? They care about the findings. And so you're going to front load those findings for them. You got to think about how much time and energy do they have to write a report? Some people are still writing those 50, 100 200 page reports, but who's reading those? Probably just the other researchers still. And so if you really want to get it read, then you're thinking, okay, how do I make this 10 pages, 5 pages? How can I put this onto one page? What are the key findings there, right? And that's tough. That is a really tough skill that I, you know, I'm always working with my students on how to do that. It requires understanding what is the most important thing that they need to know. And part of that requires understanding who is it that you're communicating to. So oftentimes you're going to have multiple reporting mechanisms for one, if any given project. So you might have that big technical report that has all the key information. So if they need it, it's there. You might have that 10, 15 page report that is for their general reading. So like the person who really needs to understand the evaluation, but maybe doesn't need to go to the technical report, that's going to be good for them. The 3-page report is going to be great for like the board of directors, for the C-suite folks, those folks that just don't have the time to read that long report. And so 3 pages, that's about as much as you're going to get from them. And then the 1-pager is a really great way to communicate back to participants. Flyers that you could put up in the community if it's relevant, or you could mail out to participants or something. So 1 page is usually sufficient for that. So, you know, you've got different reporting mechanisms. You're changing the language. You're changing the organization. You're thinking more about what are you including? Like oftentimes I'm not including the statistics themselves, right? Or if I am, they are footnotes, and more often they're endnotes, right? So for those of us who want to know that stuff, we can go look for it, but everybody else doesn't get bogged down with that of like, what is a t-test? Well, I don't know, right? I mean, I know, but they don't know. And so why do I need to describe that? Just say the results, but that just puts a little bit more onus on us to make sure that we're saying things in an ethical, correct, accurate manner.
So I'm guessing you probably use infographics.
Yeah, a lot of people use infographics. I'm not a huge infographic person per se, but I am thinking a lot about the visual design of what I'm putting together. So like if I'm doing a 1-page graph, and maybe some people would call that an infographic, I think that's just a particular style, but Yeah, I'm thinking a lot about the visual nature of things. It's not just going to be Times New Roman size 12 font on a, you know, black text on white paper. I'm going to think a lot about colors and branding and how to pop out the message and visualization of the data and all that type of stuff to help make it engaging and thoughtful and critical for the audience.
We'd done a webinar with a researcher and she did evaluation on healthcare. She actually had a graphic designer on her team. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, so that he, I think it was a he would make infographics and like cartoon, like, you know, those quick cartoon kind of things to show different points they were trying to make. Nice, so yeah. That was neat. Did you use any video?
Some people are. Kylie Hutchinson has a cool book on a short primer on innovative evaluation reporting, thinking beyond just the report. And so videos, podcasts, blogs, tweets, postcards. There are some people who are getting arts-based reporting methods. I was just talking to somebody who like put, literally they did the evaluation and then they brought the participants back to do art on the results of the evaluation. It's just like, wow, that is very innovative, right? Yeah. And it spoke a lot to how that, like what their program's values are and what they care about, right? They're not going to want that. Well, I think they wanted the report, but that wasn't going to be it. That wasn't going to be enough for them, right? So there's a lot of ways we could think about beyond just the traditional report.
Yeah. With this podcast, I've interviewed a lot of researchers and evaluators. And one interesting to me is a lot of the research out there is gated, right? And a lot of, just because of the nature of it. And some of the researchers I've interviewed, they do like participatory research or art-based, and then it's a little bit more public for people to see. Now, with evaluation, it sounds like it's more public maybe for the participants, but you're probably not going to make it public to anyone unless it's a certain type of organization you're working with, right?
You know, it's a fascinating question, one I'm really interested in as well. So I love open science stuff. I am a big proponent of it. And in fact, I am guest editing a special issue on open science and evaluation because I think there's a lot that the open science community can bring to evaluation. And I also wonder to what extent those practices are being done in the community. There's some things that we do pretty well compared to researchers. Like, for example, for the most part, I would say we are pre-registering our work in some capacity because we have to write proposals for our clients. Nobody's calling that a pre-registration, but we're doing that. And that's basically a pre-registration. We're saying this is what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. We maybe don't get to the step of very clearly defining our analysis techniques and all that type of stuff, but we could, right? But like, to what extent are the data and materials and the final report publicly available? Like, and it doesn't have to be an all or nothing or fully public or not, right? But to what extent that people are making it public, I'd be very curious to know. I think there are probably people who are out there doing that. I also think it's probably not something that all evaluators do all the time, but rather think about who are the people they are working with. Because if they say, no, you cannot share, well, for the most part, they usually own that data. So you can't share, right? But then how could we maybe work with the people we're working with to explain why we want to share it and the importance of that? So yeah, I think those are great questions that hopefully we have a call for proposals out right now. Hopefully we get some people who are really investigating that and thinking about how evaluation practitioners are doing those type of open science stuff.
Great. Well, thank you. I'm always curious about that.
Yeah, so, me too.
My last question is, what's one piece of advice you would give someone starting out as an evaluator?
Yeah, I think one, welcome to the community. I'm a big proponent of evaluation. I love our field. We have fun conferences every year. It's a wonderful place to work. And I've been in it for like 10 years now, and it's just been amazing every year. But I think if you're really interested in getting into evaluation, it's important to get into that community. So part of that is taking some courses on evaluation, because it's not just going to be you just do an evaluation on your own and there you go. Like, you should really think about how you're doing that. And one of the best ways I think you can do that is through training. So the American Evaluation Association has a bunch of training opportunities. The conference has a lot of professional development opportunities. There are degree programs out there. So for example, we have one here at University of Wisconsin-Stout, but there are last I checked, the 2018 was the last time I think somebody did like a landscape review. And I want to say there's like 84 programs across the United States. So there's a lot to choose from that you can look for that might be in your backyard or online. So I think that's really helpful because a lot of people do fall into evaluation. They find, you know, they are really interested in research and then they get into this role that requires them to do evaluation. Or they're working for a program and the program finds out, hey, we need to do evaluation. I think you should do it. And so like, oh, okay. So they have to figure out how to do it. And I think that's the common way to get into the field. And I think it requires also just a little bit more work to get fully versed in how to do it so that you can be ethical and conscientious and apply the evaluation standards, for example, to your work as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Very good advice. Thank you, Dana, for talking with us. And thanks for those tuning in. Listeners, if you learn more about the difference between research and evaluation, we'd appreciate your support by rating and subscribing to the InVivo podcast. This helps us to share these amazing narratives with the research community. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It was great to chat today.
Thank you for joining us for Between the Data. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more about InVivo podcasts and community events, please visit go.invivobyqsr.com/community or email me, Stacy Penna, at s.penna, P-E-N-N-A, at qsrinternational.com.